Did you know there are multiple tax-deferred exchange options available for potential land sellers?
Stay tuned to the latest Well-Grounded podcast to learn more about tax-deferred exchange options. This is Randy Conan with the Red River Farm Network.
And this is Jason Menke from Acres and Shares.
This podcast brings together experts from the world of agriculture and real estate. We'll talk about farmland values, industry trends, and the economy.
In this edition of Well-Grounded, our guest is Eric Mueller. With a 20-year career in farmland brokerage and management, Eric has procured, sold, and managed thousands of acres of farmland worth several hundred million dollars in value.
As an established leader in the agricultural land and management sector, his clients and partners have included individuals, families, private and public funds, institutional investors, and bank and trust companies, bank and trust company clients throughout the United States. Eric is an active member of many local and state and national real estate associations, as well as civic and church boards, fundraising and capital campaign committees.
Welcome, Eric.
Well, thanks, guys. It's an honor to be on your show here today. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Well, let's get started. Most of our listeners have probably heard of a 1031 tax-deferred exchange. What you're doing with sower farmland, Eric, is a little bit unique, at least in my mind, something I haven't heard of. So if you could start by telling us what a 721 exchange is and how does it compare to a 1031 exchange?
Sure. So yeah, like you said, most of your listeners probably have heard of a 1031 exchange. Basically, the biggest difference between a 1031 and a 721 exchange is that you're not selling the property. So in a 1031 exchange, you sell the farm, you identify up to three replacement properties within a 45-day period of closing, and then you have 180 days to close on your replacement property or properties. With a 721 exchange, all you're doing is simply transferring that land into a private partnership like Legacy Farmland Fund. And so it's just a simple transfer. There's not an actual sale. Then you get the same type of capital you get your deferral, capital gains deferral, just exactly like you would if you're going to sell the property.
Tell me more about the Legacy Farmland Fund then.
So the Farmland Fund is a private partnership, and it was structured and built to be specific, partnership for landowners to transfer their farm in and execute that 721 exchange.
So quick question regarding that. North Dakota still has some of the toughest anti-corporate farming laws that are out there. Would the fund work with land in North Dakota, or would that be a hurdle to cross?
Yeah. So ironically, the two states that we cannot be in, are North Dakota and Oklahoma. So I don't know, for your listeners, who I'm sure there'll be a lot of them from North Dakota. We've done our research and spent a lot of money on legal to find out and figure out ways to do it. But North Dakota is one of them that we cannot get over that hurdle.
Yeah, and we have a fair amount of listeners in Minnesota, so I think the conversation, still makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. Minnesota, South Dakota, well, every other state, we are good to go.
So how long has the 721 been around, Eric?
So, yeah, it's interesting. So 721 exchanges, they've been around since 1954. So they've been around a long time, but they've been primarily used in commercial real estate. So industrial, multifamily type properties. There are a handful of exchange funds like our Legacy Farmland Fund, but for commercial out there. But up until this point, you just have not seen or haven't been used in farmland. So and really the reason why I guess we put this together. So my history has been in farmland brokerage and auctioneering for several years. And a lot of those years were with Farmers National Company, based out of Omaha, Nebraska. So I would conduct several auctions across Iowa, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Nebraska. And as I was doing that, two things popped, were very transparent to me, two issues. One of them, it was interesting how many farmland owners that we would talk to when they were thinking about selling their land, didn't have any idea what their tax consequence was. And so when I asked the question, it was just, it surprised me that they hadn't taken that into consideration or talked to their CPA up to that point. So that was one thing, the estate planning part of it and the tax planning part of it. But the other part was witnessing farmland families, and a lot of times it was the heirs. So you see one or two or three siblings, and how many times I would see one didn't want to sell and the other ones did, or vice versa. And you'd see these families in the room at the auction, literally in one corner of the room and one in the other. And they weren't talking to each other. And it was very awkward when we went to the breaks and the recesses to have those conversations. But I kept seeing over and over again, these families getting torn apart by a gift that was given to them and passed down, that their parents or grandparents had worked, you know, their tails off their whole life to be able to give this gift. And the last thing they would want to see, I would imagine, would be to have their family getting torn apart. So I kept seeing those two issues coming to the forefront over and over again. And so I started doing a little bit of research after we launched our equity fund, or actually when I was planning on the launch of our equity fund. This was something that I wanted to incorporate into that equity fund, but it was just too complicated. So I'd come up with this idea and did some research on 721 exchanges. I kind of stumbled across it and I thought, you know what, this is something that could be done in farmland or with farmland, and could be a powerful solution for farmland owners, not only for estate planning, but to keep those families, you know, intact. And so we put that on the back burner. We launched our equity fund in 2020 and we lifted it off the ground, and we built that up to a sizable fund now. And we decided to launch the 721 exchange fund about six, seven months ago. And so here we are. But that was kind of the genesis behind putting together this fund. And right now we're looking at several different deals that will be the first farms in the fund.
Well, how does it work? More people are here, at least, are familiar with the 1030 ones. How are the taxes deferred then, and what happens with the farm owner when he owns those shares?
Sure. So I got the exact verbiage of the U.S. It's from the U.S. Code 721, which is the law of the 721 exchange, and it states non-recognition of gain or loss on contribution. So no gain or loss shall be recognized to a partnership or to any of its partners in the case of a contribution of property to the partnership in exchange for an interest in the partnership. So once that farm is contributed using the 721 exchange, that farmland owner no longer owns the farm, but he owns a share of all the farms that are in the portfolio. So it really diversifies his investment. Once it's in the fund, he's got a plethora of options available to him. One of those being just retaining those shares and receiving the income. There's a quarterly dividend that will be paid out. They can pass those shares down, split them up equally, run equally, or however they want to family members or whomever they wish. They can incorporate them into a estate plan, all the way into maybe doing a charitable remainder trust. There's all kinds of different estate planning mechanisms that they can incorporate those shares into. So it just gives them a variety of options, where it wasn't necessarily available before. Before they would have one option, that would be to sell, or I'm sorry, two options: sell or pass the farm down to the family or whomever. So it just, there's a lot of flexibilities that it allows for.
So if somebody's looking at I guess becoming part of the fund, I mean, how does that process look like valuation wise? You know, is it appraised? Or, I mean, if you think of the land market's been strong the past couple of years, so a lot of stuff is sold at auction. As it plateaus, you know, there might be some different ways to sell farms. But I mean, if somebody's looking at that option with your fund, how is the property? Is there an appraisal done, or how does that work?
Sure. Yeah. So we look at these farms differently than we would look at any farm that we were going to purchase. And so we get a call in or an inquiry in, here's a farm, here's our situation. We look at that farm and analyze it like we would any other farm. And so we're looking at comparable sales. We're looking at what that farm can return. You know, we're digging into what are the expenses? What are the yields on this farm? We look at it exactly the same way. And then we go back to the farmland owner and present a value that we think it's worth. And so it can become a negotiation, just like it would in any other sale transaction. But at the end of the day, it has to return, because those land owners that are contributing to the farm into the fund are shareholders, just like all the other contributors. And so we have to maintain and protect that return. And so that all gets taken in consideration. So once we arrive at a price or a value that farm can come into the fund, we execute what we call a contribution agreement, which is much like a purchase agreement. We'll go through a due diligence process, much like we would on any other purchase. And those are fairly extensive. We do phase ones, surveys, obviously all the title work. And so we look at the farm. So we know when that farm comes in, we know exactly what we have. And then once that gets transferred in, the farmland owner receives their shares, and then away we go.
What about improvements to the land? How does that get taken care of?
Sure. So once it's in the fund, we manage these farms both internally, and then we also utilize third-party farm management firms. And so we're looking at each farm. If improvements are needed, we capitalize those and make those improvements. Obviously, that all makes a difference on what the rents are and all that. But we take care of all that. Both, like I said, we internally manage the portfolio, and externally have farm managers that help us integrate those capital improvements.
You know, the past few years, Eric, in our neck of the woods, so, you know, Minnesota, North Dakota, maybe part of South Dakota, we've really seen, you know, the strong net farm income, especially in the valley with beets and potatoes, edible beans. Farmers have been, you know, willing to pay more than investors, so they've kind of kept investors out. And our cap rate, for the most part, it's maybe changing now, but has been around 2%. I've been working on some private deals this summer where investors are looking at closer to a 3% gross. I mean, maybe not specific to your deal. I don't know if that's, you know, private information, but what are you seeing for what investors are looking at for a rate of return these days?
Yeah, we expect to be right in that same range, Jason. And you know, this, unlike our equity fund where we're going in and trying to get farms bought off market, maybe under market, to make those returns work, this is a little different. This is a, you know, truly is a legacy fund. And so the returns we understand aren't going to be much different than what a farmland owner is getting today if they're to cash rent the farm. And so that's an expectation that we set and we put out there to potential contributors. And if it falls below that threshold, it just may not work out. Maybe the best option there is to simply sell. So we just look at each farm and each case on a one-on-one level and make sure that it fits for not only the fund, but also the contributors.
So why is now a critical time for farmland owners to be knowledgeable and beneficial ways to plan for their estate?
Sure. Yeah. So we all know that the average age of the farmer and farmland owner is growing every year. And so we see a lot of farmland turnover already kind of starting to happen. But I think over the next 20 years, you're going to see a lot of farms change hands. And whether that's, you know, farms getting passed down or sold, I think there's going to be just a whole lot of transferring going on. And so we just feel that, you know, it's always a good time to get your estate plan put into place. And just like I said before, on my experiences seeing so many times before, where, you know, these are very high valued assets that to not have a plan in place, it just behooves of folks to do that. And so, and then also when you put into consideration, you know, the different taxes that are having to be paid and potential be having to be paid, we just feel like now is the time to get an estate plan put into place. And this is just one potential solution that one can include in that estate plan. It's not going to work for every situation, but we just wanted it to be there and be a solution for at least somebody to look at. And if it works in their situation, then great.
And it seems to complement your other services. I mean, to me, that's what makes sense about what you're offering. It's just another tool, so to speak, for people with different challenges.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, And I know there's, you know, there's a lot of different flexibilities as a farmland owner contributes his farm into the fund. And I'll just go into that real quickly if I can. First of all, the whole idea is to protect the legacy of the farm. And so what does that mean? First, if a farmland owner has a tenant that's been on the farm for a long time, they want to see that farm, that tenant stay on there, or they have a child or up and coming sibling or somebody that, that wants to stay on the farm, we can accommodate that and give them the first right to farm that, that farm back. And so that's one item. Another one is we can offer a first right to repurchase the farm. So if grandpa and grandma have a grandson that they know would want to maybe have an opportunity to buy that farm back at the then fair market value, we can carve that right out as well. And then also if there's recreation on the property, say that they've been hunting the land for years and decades, and they want to maintain the ability to do that, we can certainly put that, that carve out in as well. And then finally, each farm that comes into the fund, we create a special purpose entity to name that farm. And so we would name that farm, whatever the family name is. So Smith Family Farm LLC. And so on the plat book, it would look to everybody else not knowing the transaction happened. It would look like they just made, you know, an estate planning move. And so we want to attach that name to that farm just to keep that, that tie and that legacy back to the farm and owner.
Eric, you know, we talked briefly about 1031s, you know, just out of curiosity. So with Acres and Shares, been working on, as I mentioned, some private stuff this summer where I've had some 1031 stuff going on. But in general, you know, that market seems to be a little quieter in recent years with the farmer financial strength. What are you seeing kind of across the country or maybe, you know, down in the Omaha area, are you seeing much for 1031 exchanges?
Yeah, I tell you what, you see more 1031 exchanges of where it's a different type of a property wanting to get into farms. You know, so maybe a commercial property, they want to, but the owner wants to 1031 into a farm. The problem with that is trying to find a farm and get that all executed. That's where your biggest challenge is. I mean, the market for farmland is just, it's very slim. What do they say? Probably around 1% changes hands in the open market per year. So the 1031, I guess that's another advantage, I guess, that a 721 exchange might have is that you don't have those time constraints. But that's, I guess that's kind of what I see. Farmland owners that sell a farm and execute a 1031, I don't see that happening very often unless they have a farm that's, you know, maybe 20, 30 miles away and they want to get closer. But even then, they're going to have a farm to be able to roll that into. And that can be very difficult.
Last question that I have for you, just different perspective. So what's your current take in the farmland market? I know, you know, summers are quieter, so we maybe need to wait until fall to see where this market established itself at, but what's your current take?
Yeah. So I think it's, we're kind of flattening out right now. It seems, I talked with folks all over the place, brokers and auctioneers and different folks in the industry. And what I'm hearing is that there seems to be less and less buyers. The value seem to be being maintained. But you're seeing less buyers competing, I think, right now. So, and it just kind of depends on where you're at. So in the Midwest, that's where we're seeing it. So we own farms down in the Delta and into the Southeast. And, you know, there's there, you have larger tracts. And so you have less buyers in the market. And so it's not quite as competitive. But even there, people are really starting to watch and look at numbers a little bit more closely. So I'd say just in general, I think the farmland values are kind of flattening out. You're starting to hear a little bit of stress out in the marketplace. So where they'll go from here, it's hard to say. But farmland in general always seems to be resilient. So we'll see.
Absolutely. In fact, the only thing I'd add to your comments, because that's, you know, what I've been telling folks, is that you could see some areas that are, if they're more stressed, maybe outside of the valley, If there's a lot of land for sale this fall or this next land sale season from fall till spring, you know, you could see some corrections. But if there's not much for sale, I mean, there's still money out there. There's still buyers. It's just that they're not as abundant as they maybe were a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I would agree. And it also kind of depends too. If there's farmers that are a little stressed and want to maybe sell an 80 to help their balance sheet, I think, and that's what we're looking at, and we're starting to get some calls on our equity fund, are those kind of arrangements. So we're starting to see a little bit of that. If you're a farmland owner who is an absentee landowner, if they see the market, typically what I've seen in the past, the couple times in my career where it's softened or kind of, you know, stagnated out, you'll see them just not sell. They'll hold on to it and ride the wave until the values come back again. So that's why you just, you know, the farmland market, it's tight. It's just, you don't see a lot of farms come to the market, and that's what helps keep the values up.
Well, anything else you want to add at all to this, Eric, to our conversation here before we let you go?
You know, not really. I guess the main thing is, you know, if anybody wanted to learn more or had questions on a specific farm or situation, as far as the Legacy Farmland Fund goes, you can go to our website. It's www.legacyfarmlandfund.com. And you've got just a whole plethora of information there. Legacyfarmlandfund.com. And we also have several webinars and other podcasts that we've done in the past. And so you can learn quite a bit there, but feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to chat and visit see if it could be a solution.
Thanks to Eric Mueller for being part of this conversation. The Well-Grounded Podcast is a presentation of Acres and Shares and the Red River Farm Network. If you have farmland or beetstock questions, please contact me at 218-779-1293.
And you can find this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. It's also available at rrfn.com and acresandshares.com. Until next time, I'm Randy Koenig.
And I'm Jason Menke.